Welcome to the Unforgiving 60 with your hosts, Ben Pronk and Tim Curtis.
Welcome back to the Unforgiving 60. We're just about to talk on mindfulness and living in the present, but before we do this, let's go back to the past. Our last episode was with Elizabeth Armstrong, and we had a fantastic conversation about her life and development as a leader, in particular in the context of her current role in Myanmar. Tim, what did you take away?
I sent her a text message immediately after we did the recording, and I simply said, "You are inspiring," and she does absolutely inspire me. We've got the benefit of having worked a little bit with Elizabeth, and I'll tell you what, if you're interested in aid, humanitarian or development work, you want to go and work on that program because of her leadership. She redefines busy.
Yeah.
Unbelievable. Yeah. The way that she manages her time, I really liked her quote, "It's not about always filling your days with other people's priorities." I think that's a nice way to look at it. And the second takeaway was the way that she invests so much time in understanding the context of the complexity that is Myanmar. And you can talk to mission analysis and the great intelligence preparation of the battlefield that's used in the military, and the way also that she engages her experts. In particular, her empathy with the local national staff is quite unbelievable. She really is able to draw the very, very best out of her staff.
That was so telling when we asked the question, how do you keep going in when the circumstances change, or, you know, there's futility or potential even sense of hopelessness? And I think she answered quite simply, if I look at my local staff and if they can keep doing it, I can.
And they just keep going. And I think that there's, you know, if they can keep going, I can keep going.
And it's a beautiful discussion. Everything you've just said talks to that triangle model of leadership, where it is a constant dynamic between the leader, the followers, and the context. And we need to keep changing the way we lead, depending on all of those variable factors. And I think Elizabeth is nailing that.
And the Western tendencies don't really consider those imperfect solutions. You know, she's in this world of complexity where leadership is messy, things are constantly changing, political decisions are made that take the country potentially backwards. And those imperfect solutions are just sometimes necessary. You know, she talked about competing budgets, priorities, times, and the culture and the complex operating environment. It's phenomenally difficult as a leader in Myanmar.
No, it certainly is. Well, that's enough reflecting on the past. Let's get to the present, as I'm sure our next guest will tell us all about.
Let's get on with the show. Welcome back to the Unforgiving 60. Today on the show, we have Tim Jack Adams. Tim founded the Green X7 framework, with a purpose being to improve the quality of life for individuals and teams. He's worked with such clients as the Australian Army, Red Bull, and a number of the major banks. We like to think of Tim as the Bishop of Breathing, the Zulu of Zen, and the Mogul of Mindfulness. Stand by while we interview Tim Adams.
Welcome to the Unforgiving 60. I'm Ben Pronk, and I'm joined by my co-host, Tim Curtis. G'day, Tim.
G'day, Ben.
Well, as the intro suggested, we're joined by another Tim today, Tim Jack Adams, and we're going to talk about mindfulness. I am a convert, and I'm very interested to hear what the other Tim has to say today. But this Tim, Tim Curtis, you're not so sure.
Well, I'm a believer in breathing. I think that's kind of important.
Okay, so that's your first Tim.
I don't mind a little bit of meditation, but only as it focuses on breathing. Outside of that, I'm curious to demystify this big word, mindfulness, because we get inundated with these ideas and the things that we must do. You must do yoga. No, don't do yoga, do Pilates. You must meditate. You must stand on your head. Well, I think the one interesting thing that we're going to do today is pull that apart and work out what are the critical parts of mindfulness that are relevant for normal people.
Well, it sounds like we've got exactly the right person to help us do that dissection. So, Tim Jack Adams, welcome.
G'day, lads. How are we?
Very well.
Tim, it's Tim. This could be peculiar today. Thanks for joining the Unforgiving 60 podcast. Now, one of the reasons why we've got you on here is that you have come incredibly well...
Regarded.
Known.
Endowed.
You weren't talking to my mum about
from a building company who you've done some work for, and they thoroughly recommended that we should speak to you. And we really like the broad topic of mindfulness, although somewhat skeptical on what the definition is and what the things are that it's important. So through this journey on the episode, we're very keen to get to the bottom of what is the definition of mindfulness and what are the important parts of mindfulness, including the ones that could be applied for the everyday person and for the modern leader against the daily challenges and the contemporary societal problems. But probably worth just starting with you giving an overview of yourself and how you got to where you are as the mogul of mindfulness.
Sounds good, lads. And yeah, I think mindfulness is definitely a hot topic at the moment. And a little bit about me. I grew up on the Tweed in Gold Coast, pretty much a coasty kid, didn't really do so great at school. So I, not knowing what I wanted to do or where I wanted to be, I ended up traveling a fair bit around the world in Australia. And during that time, I actually just kept a journal of all the things that I loved and didn't like. So I tried living in the city. I tried living in Scotland, building log cabins, you know, being a stockman, you name it. And at the end of that list, I came up with the things that I really loved to do. And that was actually just reconnecting, you know, to nature and reconnecting to other people and basically inspiring them through active activities. From there, mate, we started Water Sports Guru, which is still going today. It's 10 years, actually, this year. I had my 10th summer just gone, which was a good one. And basically through that, it's how GreenX7 started. And the way that it started is when you're sitting down on a creek or out in the ocean, you really have an opportunity to actually just observe. And what I was observing with all of our customers, whether it was corporates, families, school children, was when they were actually starting to reconnect to self, others, and nature, they were healthier and they were happier. I had a look at my own life and, you know, where I was at that moment. And I looked at the people around me and how I grew up. And I realized I was probably faring better than most of them. And it was because I was actually doing these seven tools that now are the basis of GreenX7 that actually helped me mentally, emotionally, and physically. So back in 2013, basically started doing the research and development behind it. We started working with universities and health professionals all over the world. And it took us about 4 years to create what is now called GreenX7. And sitting in that is actually what we call breath, or what you can call mindfulness as well. And that's pretty much where we're up to these days.
And what is mindfulness and why isn't it a fluffy term?
Mate, to be honest, 5 years ago, I would have said it was a fluffy term. 'cause 5 years ago, mate, I definitely wasn't on the wellness track that I am now. I had some problems and unfortunately a very good mate of mine, you know, sort of took his own life because of the situations that, you know, he was in, and I was probably going around the same path. But when I first discovered mindfulness, it wasn't actually through the word mindfulness, or it wasn't about reading about it or going to yoga. It was actually through freediving. And basically freediving is really about using your breath to lower your heart rate, to be 100% present, and to then basically go as deep and as long as you can. Now, mindfulness for me is purely just being in the present moment. So giving this moment 100% of your attention. And that for me is mindfulness. And the easiest way to do it is using the tool of breath to get there.
That's super interesting, and I'm glad you said that, because my very surface level understanding of mindfulness is exactly that. And I, in fact, I jotted down a couple of quotes. One, the old John Lennon quote, "Life is what happens to you while you're busy making other plans." And another one, which came from the side of a Lululemon bag, which is where I get most of my
which is your gym bag, is it? In fact, it's your gym bag that's collecting dust in the cupboard from the looks of it.
There you go. But it talks about living in the moment could be the meaning of life. But I love that idea, the idea that, you know, this is it. These little vignettes that we're experiencing right now is what you should be focusing on. Is that pretty much what you define mindfulness as?
Mate, for me personally, yeah, and I think that every time you talk to anybody that does mindfulness, you're probably going to get a roundabout a similar opinion. Or, you know, sometimes we call mindfulness so fluffy because we think about meditation and a guru sitting in a cave cross-legged with a long beard. you know, but I was probably more concerned that with meditation than mindfulness. But, you know, so much research is, you know, like a great one at the moment that I've just read about was we're spending 47% of our time thinking about the past and worrying about the future. And, mate, I know for me it's definitely the case. You know, when you're running businesses and, you know, life's busy, you're constantly thinking and those thoughts are constantly running through your mind. But when I first started to use my breath purely just as a, you know, through freediving, I started to actually understand that I could start to cut out or cancel some of this noise around me or in my mind and actually really start to focus on the here and now. I think the practical ways that we use mindfulness, I'll tell you the best way, guys, to use mindfulness, but for everyone out there, and this really saved my relationship, and far out this works. So basically, it all came about, I was having a meeting with a guy, and I won't name his name, we're actually good mates now, but he was a bit of a marketing guru. And we were sitting there, I was paying for his time, and you know, we're sort of having this great conversation, but every probably few minutes his phone would ring. And, you know, he'd answer and be like, oh, look, sorry, mate, don't mean to interrupt it. Do you mind if I get this? Next minute, you know, his text message would come through from his brother. And it was this constant interruption. Now, on the other end here, I'm getting bloody frustrated because I'm paying for his time. And he was just everywhere else but the present, right? So I thought I'd give him a little bit of a taste of his own medicine. I said, oh, look, mate, I said, what's been the highlight in your marketing career? And the guy's done a lot of stuff. And just as he was getting really excited, he's getting the crescendo of his, you know, his career, I literally pull out my phone and just start flicking through social media.
Right? Dose of his own medicine.
And anyway, I look up after a few seconds and his face was aghast, right? He could not believe that I would actually do that to him. And I looked at him and I said, mate, I said, how does it feel? And he said, oh, it feels like shit. I said, right. I said, well, that's exactly how you're making me feel right now. Anyway, after that, mate, he switched his phone off. We had a great meeting. 3 days later, he gives me a call and he goes, Timmy, I think you might have just saved my relationship because I had no idea I was doing that to my partner and to my kids every time that I was at home. And I think that's one of the things that we can use with mindfulness is about being present with those around us, with whether it's your loved ones, whether it's your work colleagues, whether it's your strangers on the street. We're so used to picking up that phone or looking at social media when people are talking to us that it actually strips that person of feeling valued, right, and having a sense of meaning. And so if we want to use mindfulness in the most practical term, it would literally just be, you know what, when you're actually having a human connection with someone, make it a positive one and don't look at your phone, don't answer it and actually feel like you're giving that person everything you've got because it's going to make them feel great. Does that make sense?
100%. And it hits on a point that I actually wanted to ask you about. You talk about connection and you know, in some cases, the disconnectedness, which is very reminiscent of a guy called Sebastian Junger, who wrote a book called Tribe. And he talks a lot about the isolation and the disconnectedness that modern humans feel and that lack of, I guess, social grouping and social connection, which is causing a lot of negative impacts. And certainly from our perspective, you actually see it a lot with the military, you know, people who belong to this tribe, this series of meaningful relationships, if they get out and do not have a replacement for that, that's when you can often see things like PTSD and that sort of thing manifest. And it's really interesting you talking about that lack of meaningful connectedness in a lot of people's lives.
I honestly think it's the root of everything at the moment. I think our connection to technology and our disconnection to having positive human connections is probably the what's causing, you know, depression and mental health and everything else. Like, guys, if we look at wellness, at the end of the day, the foundation of wellness is actually connection, because what it does is it creates self-worth, and we need self-worth to want to look after ourselves. Like, no one's going to go out there and do mindfulness and meditation if they don't actually care and or have some self-love about themselves.
So we spoke before about there not necessarily being a stigma, but, you know, this idea of mindfulness as a fluffy concept, and it may be at odds with the idea of what traditionally Aussie males and males all around the world have thought of what it means to be a man. Speaking specifically about males, where can we find these sort of relationships? How can you broach these? How can you start developing this connectedness with your various social groups?
Mate, yeah, this is an interesting one, isn't it, with blokes, because we're so bloody good at wearing masks. I grew up with five brothers, and we're all pretty rough and tough guys. Started boxing at an early age, you know, always told to harden up and the rest of it. And it was probably not until, you know, about 3 or 4 years ago, when Mal sort of, you know, took his life, that I realized that, you know, the masks that we all wear really don't do us any good. Yes, we can, you know, we can act tough and hard when we need to, but at the end of the day, you know, if we're actually going to connect with our fellow men, we actually do have to show some vulnerability. And look, that's not easy. Like, that's bloody tough. It took me years and years of a lot of heartache and pain and losing a lot of relationships around me before I decided to go, you know what, this whole wearing a mask thing really isn't helping me mentally, and it's definitely not, you know, helping a lot of people around me that have taken their lives. So maybe we actually have to, you know, be the bigger man and actually be vulnerable. And I think that's where you start creating those connections, right? You know, if you be vulnerable with a mate, he's going to be vulnerable back. You get a deeper connection. You start talking, you know, more about actually life and less about probably the footy and weather. And I think that's where it's got to start, lads. It's just, you know, being vulnerable yourself.
And we were very bad, I think, historically. Ben and I both spent our first careers in uniform, and the majority of that time in male-dominated units. And there was no sharing. It was a sign of weakness, so everything was very much internalised. Tim, I read a book years ago that pretty much changed my outlook on life and the sort of things that you're talking about. The book is Manhood by Steve Bidoff. After I read that book, for the first time since I've been a young boy, I hugged my father and kissed him. And I hugged my brother. Now, my father spent 35 years in the military. He got out as a one-star general, and he was not used to being hugged. But that changed our relationship significantly. The fact that I, with one small gesture, a hug, embraced my father, and now we do it every single time. Unabashedly, we kiss each other, and we thoroughly enjoy each other's company. And that connection, when we first see each other every single moment, has really redefined it. Same with my brother.
How good is that? I love that story, mate.
I'm still trying to hug and kiss Ben, but he's not letting me. He's resisting.
I'm still wearing that mask.
It depends how long the hug goes for, mate, because if it's anything longer than 3 seconds, you're doing it.
Yeah, he's grabbing my butt, and that's super awkward.
Well, Ben wears a mask. In fact, I'm trying to get him to take it off. You don't need to wear your gorilla mask in the studio.
It's actually funny. I mean, I tell my brother frequently that I love him. We sort of end the phone call like that. And there's been more than one occasion where I've been talking with him, normal Aussie blokey sort of banter, you know, in public with other mates around. And then I finish by saying, I love you. And I get these super weird looks from my other mates around me on the end of the phone. But I think it is important.
Mm. And that's the reality. We do love our siblings. We do love our parents. And to a certain extent, we love our friends, colleagues and co-workers. We just don't express it very well. So probably to my next question, Tim, how do we start? Where do we start?
Good question, mate. Well, I think a lot of the times it takes a switch to be flicked. And which, you know, which isn't a great thing, because it'd be awesome if we could actually do a prevention before prescription lifestyle. But, you know, many of the guys that I'm dealing with, whether they're CEOs or soldiers, mate, something dramatic has to happen before they actually start to wake up and go, yeah, okay, the way I'm living right now and the way I'm treating others isn't actually quite working. And we can see that from all the statistics. You know, when we look at, you know, suicide, it's now the highest it's ever been, and it's the largest, you know, cause of killing for blokes between 15 and 44. So we obviously know that the way we've been living doesn't work. So which then goes to, well, how do we actually start? Mate, like you, I think, mate, what you were saying about, you know, just starting easily, maybe with a sibling, maybe giving your dad a hug. I've got three dads, interesting childhood. I've got two out of three of them so far, mate. I'm still working on the third one that we call Chief.
66%, that's a credit.
It's getting there, mate. It's getting there. I'm slowly wearing him down. But I think, mate, I honestly do think it has to come with vulnerability. And if you're the first to do it, like you did with your dad, you know, give him a hug, then it gives them permission to do it back. You know, and look, some of us are a hell of a lot harder to break than others. And sometimes it creates conversations. We actually created a card game around basically because, you know, I grew up with a lot of brothers, two of them being in and out of rehabs for, you know, over a decade now, really struggling to work out, you know, how to open up to blokes. We created this card game where you basically lay out eight cards, you know, and on each card one says sleep, relationships, friendships, mental health, you know, physical health, fun, and et cetera. And basically you just ask the person on the other end, you know, pick a card that you're feeling pretty good with at the moment. And they tell it to you about it. And the next, you know, the next question is, well, okay, well, what's one of these cards that you want to improve on at the moment, even if it's just for this week? You know, and whatever card it is, what it does is it actually doesn't make it personal. So it actually puts the cards on the table. You're talking to the cards. It takes all of that white noise that's in our head, right? All the stuff that just creates us to be frustrated, angry, impatient, sad, happy, whatever it is, puts it on the table. And you can actually just talk to a set of cards. And I find that that was really easy. Sometimes having a head-on-head conversation with someone. Have you ever realized when blokes have a conversation, they don't actually stand front on, they actually stand side on, right? Like, I really got to look into the research behind that. But what I tend to find is that if we can sort of make the conversation not so direct and sort of dance around it in a certain way to begin with, then I find that's quite easier than just going straight to someone, mate, how are you feeling, and be honest about it. It's a pretty tough way to start if you're not used to it.
Mm. We had two previous episodes, one with Dr. Dan Pronk, where he talks about post-traumatic stress and coming out of that and learning lessons and using them for post-traumatic growth, and one with Tim Robertson, the chronic overachiever. And he talks about stress and anxiety probably wound up into a midlife crisis. But your point's interesting. They needed something, an event that triggered that growth.
Look, in GreenX7, you talk about three areas for everyday wellness. Sorry, the others we've spoken a little bit about. What about self? You talk about the requirement for self-care and a life rhythm. Can you expand on those a bit more, Tim?
Yeah, definitely, Benny. So basically, connection to self is something, you know, like it probably sits up there with mindfulness. You're going to start saying it's fluffy and girly and all that sort of stuff. But what I realized, all it really means is basically reflecting on where you are at the moment and where you need to be. So when I reflect on self, it's basically purely being mindful in the moment to actually stop and have a thought and go, right, how am I actually doing right now? You know, am I tired? Am I stressed? Am I angry? What are my emotions? Am I, you know, financially, you know, burdened? And really, reflection of self is just purely that, is reflecting on where you are and what you need to do to pull your socks off and move forward to basically improve, you know, positively mental, emotional and physical change in your life.
What about the role of exercise? You talk about movement. You know, I think there's a bunch of research, and certainly anecdotally, I'm feeling better on those occasions.
Physiologically, where it's
yeah, 100%.
Mate, yeah, without a doubt, movement mate, movement is the number one thing. If I, you know, if we want to start with anything, you know, when we talk about that rhythm, the one thing we always start with is get people to set up a sleep routine, you know, from whenever they want to go to bed to whenever they wake up, and lock that in. Because at the end of the day, we need our batteries to be energized to want to go do movement, right? When you're sleep deprived, when you're exhausted, chances are you're not going to have it in you to actually go and exercise. When you've had a good night's sleep and your battery's recharged, you're more likely to do movement. Once you do movement, you're more, you know, you're getting those happy chemicals, those serotonins, the BDNFs, the dopamines, all these things that make you feel good. And so when we talk about people that are depressed and things like that, the best thing we can actually get them to do is create a routine around just walk around the block or walk to the park or take the dogs to the beach, whatever it is for them. It definitely starts with movement because it can create, you know, the psychological change in our brains that we need to make ourselves feel better to then take it to the next step.
Some really interesting science out of the US actually at the moment that light exercise, so not running or anything with intensity, but walking is better for thinking and compiling ideas.
And if you're present too, like here's the thing that I noticed. So I live just near the beach and I take the dogs for a walk every morning. And I'll find, you know, on the beach, there's two types of people. There's the ones that don't have their shoes on, they're not connected to technology, and they're being mindful, they're present, right? They're looking at the sunrise, they're feeling the sand between their toes, they're really engaged in the moment. And then you get the other group that are, you know, got the shoes on, got the headphones in, you know, their heads down, and they're going for it. And they won't, like, you'll pass them within a meter and they won't even look up and smile. And I think that what we can do is that we start combining, you know, all these tools together. Not only do we just do mindfulness by itself, not only do we just do movement by itself, not only do we just go out into the environment, because obviously the environment has a massive impact on our physical and emotional well-being as well, but we actually start combining all these together, and especially when we're talking about that positive human connection as well. And so one of the things that we try and get our clients to do is basically combine all these tools into one. So it's like leave the phone behind, grab a friend, grab your partner, go to a park, you know, be mindful while you're there and actually totally be in that environment whilst you're walking. And then at the end of it, sit down cross-legged if you want or on a chair and actually do some breath work while you're sitting under a shady tree. Like it's that simple. But those things combined within 20 minutes has an amazing effect on your mental health.
Mm. Ben asked Tim Robertson the question, what's your definition of happiness? And his answer was very interesting. He said, I've been at my happiest when I was walking along the seafront in Hobart with a cappuccino in my hand, looking out at my seaplane. What's your definition of happiness?
Geez, I thought we nailed it then. I thought we can all just have a walk with a cappuccino.
There's a footnote here. That business didn't last. And he talks a lot about that on the podcast. So I won't go back through it. But what's your definition of happiness, Tim?
Oh, mate, you know, it's funny this because my partner and I, Carly's my partner. She's we've been talking about layers of happiness. And I love this because for me, it's like I can wake up in the morning and, you know, I'll have some gratitude time, do my stretching and a bit of things. And I'll have some moments of gratitude. And then, you know, you'll go and get a coffee and that's added another layer of happiness. And then I might go down to the beach, which is added another layer of happiness. If my partner's not working, she's a firefighter, you know, she'll be there and that adds an extra layer of happiness. And what I find is that there's so many different layers of happiness. You know, and you can just keep compiling and compiling. But the fact of the matter is that when everything gets stripped away from you, happiness starts all over again because you become happy with just Nescafe 43, you know, instead of your cafe latte. And I think right there and then it all comes down to attitude. Like my happiness all comes down to my attitude. If I decide to be happy, I'll be happy. If I want to be miserable, then I can be miserable too. It doesn't matter how good life is around me. It all comes down to an attitude choice.
I love that. I'm personally a massive fan of Stoicism. I love that as a philosophy, and I in particular love that idea that we get so worked up about things we can't control. And in many cases, you know, the only thing that impacts us is how we choose to react. And I like that idea of you know, choosing how you define happiness and not constantly chasing that next material goal.
I saw Gail Kelly, the former CEO of Westpac, talk at a leadership breakfast, and she talked about leaving your work troubles outside the house, and she would get to the front door and make a conscious decision, regardless of how terrible her day had been, of leaving all that behind, and she would walk through the door with a new air of positivity, so she didn't draw the family into, you know, her stress and anxiety, but rather show them that level of pessimism. Optimism.
There's a good book on that, Tim, called Third Space, actually, that I just finished reading, which is about creating that third space in between where you were, where you, you know, come from, and where you want to go. Which is a great book, actually, for anyone that's listening, Third Space. So, yeah, it's a good one.
Yeah, we'll check it out. Hey, Tim, where do you stand on nutrition? We've sort of experimented over the years with a few different things. This Tim here is strict, strict paleo, except for all the beer and chocolate.
That's right. Yeah.
And I'm fasting at the moment, which I'm finding does good things. Where do you
open
sit
brackets,
on that?
Do not be around Ben before 11 a.m., close brackets.
And you get hangry, Ben, like me?
I don't at all. Tim's just overly sensitive.
Not that he notices, recognises.
Nutrition. Okay. Mate, this is an interesting subject, isn't it? This comes up all the time. Actually, I'm going to give credit to this one, to Bree. She's one of our founding facilitators at GreenX7. And I remember about 5 years ago when she came to work for us, and I'm actually sitting there at that stage, mate. Nutrition to me was a meat pie and a nice coffee back from my labouring days. And I'm sitting there reading it, and she goes, "Oh, how does that, you know, how does that feel?" And I'm like, "I really don't understand that question. It tastes great." And she goes, "No, like when you finish, how does that food feel?" And I'm like, man, I really shouldn't have employed this chick. She's just crazy so far. And anyway, she goes, "All I want you to do is after you finish eating it, just tell me how you feel in about 5 minutes' time." So anyway, I finish the meat pie and the iced coffee as you do. And about 5 minutes later, I start to actually reconnect to self, right? And I feel that my tummy's a bit bloated. I'm like, ugh, it's a bit uneasy. And then I feel that my brain's actually falling asleep. And what I noticed was after that is that I wasn't eating foods that taste good, but I was actually eating foods that taste good but also made me feel good. And because all of us have different body types, right, we can't all eat the same things. Some people are better on paleo, keto, vegetarian, vegan, right? But when you actually tell people to feel what foods feel like in their brain and their body, then they actually start selecting the right foods for them. And so for me, it's a bit of an 80-20, right? So if I know I'm going to do this podcast or I've got to go do a workshop, I'm going to eat foods that feel good for me. Now, on a Sunday when I'm not working, I'll completely blow out. I'll eat my pancakes. I'll do whatever I want because I know I'm just going to be sitting in the hammock. But I think if people just reconnect to self, here comes mindfulness again, right? Be present in the moment, okay, and feel what foods feel like for you. Then it goes a long way into actually choosing the right foods that we need.
That's really cool. And I like that idea, you know, in terms of attacking the potential fluffiness of mindfulness, of looking at really tangible things like the food you put in the body and the physiological activities you can conduct as a connection to that. And so on that, let's talk about breathing. Both Tim and I, as you know, come from a defence background and have both been taught and employed very successfully combat breathing, you know, just these techniques of regulating breath to get control of the physiological aspects of your stress, which has that correlating benefit to your psychological side. Can you talk a bit about breath as it pertains within the GreenX7 context?
Yeah, definitely. So I think when we talk about breath, there's two techniques. One is the very basic technique that we teach our customers. And then there's a technique when you start to get really used to it. So in free diving, it's a three-part breathing. So you first breathe in through your stomach, then you breathe in through your chest, and then you breathe in through your throat, right? So we're really trying to get as much oxygen into our body as possible. But that gets pretty complicated for someone that's never really done mindfulness or breath work before. So if you're listening right now, I'm actually going to do it really quickly for you guys and for your listeners. Just whoever's driving a car, probably don't do it. you don't want that to happen.
Or operating heavy machinery.
Yeah, or a surgeon right now. We don't want to be doing that to you. But basically all I do is just tell people to get really comfortable, whether they're lying down, whether they're in a chair. It doesn't really matter as long as you feel comfortable. And then I just get them to totally relax their body. So right now you could probably feel that your shoulders might be a little bit tense. So you just relax your shoulders a little bit. I normally just put my hands on my knees. And then what I'll do is I'll close down my eyes. And then all I want you to do is just take slow, long, deep breaths in through your nose and out through your nose. And I want these breaths to be gentle, right? I want you to be 100% present, and I want you to feel that breath coming in through your nose, breathing in for about 5 seconds, holding for two, and breathing out for five. And when we breathe in nice and deep breaths in through our stomach, we're actually expelling all that carbon dioxide that builds up throughout the day. And all we have to do is six of these breaths to actually change our physiological body, to reduce our stress, to improve our overall well-being. And so all we're doing is just a simple, long, slow, deep, gentle breath in through our nose and out through our nose. And normally I tell people, just do this for a couple of minutes, just be really comfortable. And then if you get thoughts coming into your mind, that's okay. Just think about them as a cloud. Let them float through, because it's completely normal. The idea is to just register the thought and let it go, and focus for me on all the natural sounds around me. I love to do it when I'm outdoors under a tree. And I'll actually engage into all the bird calls. If I'm near the ocean, I'll listen to the ocean. I'll feel the breath of the wind on my skin. And all I want to do is just focus on being in that present moment. And that for me is an introductory guide to breath. You still awake?
Ben went into this Zen mode. I was a little concerned. I had to give him a bit of a push. Daily routine and rhythm. Could you talk us through yours, probably embarrass us a little, and then maybe comment on whether it's important or not?
Yeah, totally. Is it important? Yes, definitely. I think it's, for me, I've been 5 years now with the same rhythm, and obviously I've noticed a massive change. So I always call it the battery, right? So I regard myself as a battery, and how's my battery doing? Am I surviving? Am I functioning? Am I thriving? And the whole idea for me each and every day is to actually have a battery that's thriving, right? Because we're more productive, we're more resilient, we're more connectable to others. So when I started looking at routine, or I call it a rhythm, I started looking at all the different things that I needed to do each day to look after my mental, emotional, and physical health. So in the morning, so I'll actually go to bed at around 9:30, depending on not if I read a book. Now, for that, I need to switch off all the technology before, right? So we need to get our circadian rhythm into whack. So I'll go to bed at 9:30, and I'll typically wake up around 4 o'clock, right? Now, the reason I wake up at 4 o'clock is because I'll do some stretching, for push-ups, a few sit-ups. But I know that my book work gets done so much faster between the hours of 5 and 7. No interruptions, I don't want to be outside, and I can really nail it. After that, I've got the dogs, I'll take them down to the beach. If I'm lucky enough, Carly will be with me. And then we'll basically go for a swim, grab a coffee, and that's me for the morning. Now, whatever happens between, you know, pretty much 7:30 and 9 o'clock at night, mate, that can do whatever it wants, right? I could get hit for 6, I could have a relaxing day. But as long as I actually lock in that sleep and I wake up doing those stretches and I go to bed, you know, reading a book, mate, that pretty much sets me up for the day.
That's awesome. I love that idea of having achieved something and having had a really positive experience in the day, and then after that, you know, the rest is just icing.
Now, in fact, further reading on that, there's a guy by the name of Cal Newport who's written a book called Deep Work, and he talks about when you're tired, you do shallow work, so things that are easy, like clearing emails or administration, booking meetings. And when you're wired, you know, in your early morning zone, you do your deep work. And in fact, recently there was a New York Times article that interviewed Cal Newport. It's quite an interesting article.
No, I'm going to read that. But I think you're right, because during the day, shit hits the fan, right? Like anything can happen. But as long as you've done something for you in that morning, you go to bed at night and you go, right, well, at least I've achieved something. I've achieved something to look after my mental health. I've achieved something to look after my, you know, emotional health and my physical health. So, mate, I reckon you can't go wrong with creating a morning routine to look after all those three things.
Tim, as you know, our podcast draws inspiration from a couple of poems, one of them the poem If by Rudyard Kipling. And I want to read you a section that I think is directly relevant to mindfulness, and then perhaps you might pass comment on the way that you view that. The last two lines are the most relevant, but for completeness, I'll read the whole section. If you can bear to hear the truth you've spoken, twisted by knaves to make a trap for fools, or watch the things you gave your life to, broken, and stoop and build them up with worn-out tools.
I love that poem. I actually listened to it again before coming onto that podcast, because it'd been years since I listened to If. And I realized after listening to it, mate, God, it brings up some goosebumps, doesn't it? Far out. God, it gets you. And I think, mate, not only those two sentences at the end, but as a whole, what that poem means for me, I think it's about being your own man and actually being able to create your own destiny. And I think it's those things. It's about being strong, being resilient, but actually being humble. And I think for me, like, that's, you know, how I want to grow up, and that's how I want to, you know, have my son and my daughters grow up. Like, at the end of the day, it's an incredible poem about being strong, be resilient, but you know what? Be humble.
Yeah. Mm. How do people find a little bit more about you and your programs, Tim?
Mate, they can probably just jump on and Google Tim Jack Adams, or the best thing would be is just go to greenx7.com, and that's where they'll find where they can do our workshops and download the app, actually. That's a really good way to create a routine is there's an app called GreenX7. You can get on your Android or App Store, and that'll actually, within 60 seconds, show you how your battery's going and exactly what you need to do to have recharge it. And, mate, actually going back to being vulnerable, we actually created, and this is going back to Mal, that friend of mine that really changed my life when he took his, there's a platform on that called Connect. And what happens is when you get your wellness report, you're allowed to share that to up to 7 people in your life. Now, some people might only have 1 or 2, but what that does is when you get that, you can see exactly how you're going. You know, how's Tim going right now? Is his fun or relationships low? Or, you know, how's Ben going right now? Is mental health or whatever struggling? You know exactly what's going on with your mate. And so you just give him a call and you just start talking about that topic. And for me, that's one of the things that I love to get. Every time I receive a battery, I got one this morning actually from my partner Carly. She's kicking ass, mate. I think she thinks it's a competition because she's always trying to beat mate with this bloody battery. Yeah, mate, she's a freak, you know. She's always bloody 90% plus, and I'm like, give me a break. And so what it does is it creates a really common language about how's your battery. You know, and for blokes, I think that that's something we need. It's very hard to talk about our emotions and how we're doing. But if you can actually go to a bloke and go, mate, how's your battery? And he goes, oh, you know, mate, it's pretty low at the moment. You're like, well, why? He goes, well, you know, I'm struggling with sleep because of the kids, and actually me and my wife are having a bit of an issue. Mate, it opens up a story. And I think that that for me is so important when we can actually have an open-ended question. And how's your battery is the one I use every single day, mate, with my mates, my clients, and anywhere I go. It's just a great question to ask.
I reckon that's a super place to wrap it up, and super advice for all of our listeners to next time you're not engaging in a relationship, pull out your mobile phone, download the GreenX7 app, and while you're at it, check us out. We're on a bunch of social media there as well, including Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. But Tim, thank you very much for your time. This has been a great conversation. I had a beautiful little moment in the middle there where I went into a transcendental state with the
breathing. And don't worry, Tim, I videoed it without Ben knowing, and that one will go viral on social media.
Good on you, boys, mate. He might open up and give you a hug after that.
Let's hope so. I need one.
Thanks, Tim. Thanks, Ben. Appreciate it.
Thanks, Tim. See you later.
Ciao.
See you guys. Bye.
Now to the debrief. We relentlessly pursue excellence on Unforgiving 60, and we want your insights and feedback. And indeed, if you know someone who has great insights to share with us that have a practical difference, then get in touch with us at debrief@unforgiving60.com. That's unforgiving60.com. We love speaking to anyone who's been walking on the path less travelled and is generally living the life less ordinary. And if you like the podcast, please rate us on iTunes. You can also follow us on social media. Just search at Unforgiving60, that's Unforgiving60. Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, and YouTube, you know what to do. See you next episode on the Unforgiving 60. All you businessmen, politicians,